Supercharged with Anna Geary on RTE Radio 1.
Hello, Cottie and Scale on this Sunday evening. How are we all feeling? Are you like me? Did you need the smelling salts to come back down after that brilliant Irish win in the last few hours? My God, like, congratulations to all of the team and management. It's fair to say it was Gunther Grafod. What a way to win a match. Like, total heart-to-mouth stuff to clinch it at the bitter end. And look, as a lover of sport, moments like that in sport, for me, just remind me that they lift a nation. It's good for the soul, it's good for the energy levels, and it's definitely good for our mental health. I can remember special days as a player with my club and county going back for years and even decades, and just, you know, that sheer joy that significant results can bring to the people in the community. The people that have supported you for years and years to the thick and thin when things haven't gone so well and they were still there. And now to give everybody a reason to celebrate like that. It's a day we're going to talk about with our grandkids, that's for sure. And that's what it's all about. And I think we'll be saying for a long time to come, remember when Tri-Parrot got that hat-trick? Where were you? And I think, you know, for me, I think that's what draws people into sport, you know. And really it's about, it's never over until it's over. Because how many people could have predicted in the matter of days that Ireland would go out and beat Portugal and Hungary? And I think really when you think about it, it actually gives hope to so many people. Like that idea that brilliance can be achieved even when the odds are stacked against you. And for me, that's more than sport. Like, that's about life. So it's definitely good for our health and well-being, which is why I really had to give it a special mention at the top of our show. Even our wonderful sound op, Liam, was listening to it on the radio as he was on the treadmill earlier. He's very healthy. And he found himself running faster and faster as the game was coming to a close. Just the adrenaline rush of it. I'm pretty sure he hit a bit of a PB. He was running so fast by the end. And if you are like me as well and that blood pressure was sky high going into that 95th minute, well, fear not, because on the show this evening, resident dietitian Orla Walsh is going to be in studio talking to us about how to lower our blood pressure and how to keep it low, because that really is life-saving stuff. We're also going to be talking about feet. Like, are you a feet person? Not many are. We like to keep them hidden. But we've plenty of questions in already for a podiatrist who's going to be in talking to us about foot care and its importance. So stay tuned for that. Actually, some of you have already been in touch.
I had a bunion on each side, on each foot.
I feel like my muscles in my feet, behind the ball of my feet, are just aching.
Athlete's foot irritation that I find I get between my toes.
Lots of common ailments that a lot of us aren't willing to admit that we have, but there will be solutions and there will be chat about that a little bit later on. And we'd love to hear from you. You can send us in any questions you have. You can text 51551. You can send us an audio message or a question using WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32. You can email supercharged@rt.ie. Sure, you can even tell us how you're feeling after the match. But first to golf. Now, a survey a few years ago found that over 500,000 Irish adults played a round of golf more than once a year, and over 200,000 of those are registered members of a club. Yes, people play for the social aspect, but I also know that the golfers, at least that I speak to, are always looking for ways to improve their game, even if it's in secret and they don't want to tell the people that they're going out on the golf course with. So joining me this evening with advice on just how much exercise can help you improve your swing and your speed is Nils Conway. He is a scratch golfer himself who works with golfers and clubs all around the country. And he even runs a gym specifically designed for golfers. Nils, welcome to Supercharged.
Thanks a million. Thanks.
Thank you so much for being in and, I suppose, giving people the tips that they need to improve their game. In your opinion, like, what fitness levels are needed if you want to take up golf and keep playing as you age?
Yeah, so golf and fitness and golf, it's everything is linked. You know, if you're fit and happy in life, your golf will improve. And that's my main rule of thumb with all of this.
Yeah.
So in terms of...
Some people think golf's enough though. They think, yeah, but that is my fitness. I go out on the golf course.
And that's the issue. And people don't think you need to be strong. People don't think you need to work on your mobility. And that's kind of the barriers that I'm kind of breaking down every single year that I'm doing this, or day, I should say. Mm. So, you know, so people, mobility is massive. You know, if people can't get into a certain position, if people can't move, how are they expected to hit the golf ball properly or even improve their golf, which is the main thing.
So if people are listening right now, is there anything like a mobility test they could do to see where they are?
Yeah. So the first thing, first thing, if you're listening right now, you can stand up, you can try and straighten your legs out and touch your toes. So hamstrings, if your hamstrings are tight, that's going to affect your posture. If your posture is wrong, that's going to affect you hitting the golf ball properly. Mm-hmm. And that's the main thing. When someone walks through my door, how do you stand up over the golf ball?
Okay, and I suppose for people even listening now at home, checking that, what about even their shoulders? You know, the rotation, your hips, you know, is there anything else that they need to be doing or checking now to, before they get into the last year?
So a big thing for, you know, as elite golfers, when I see elite guys come in, they move good, actually. Most of them do, they can move. But for, you know, your average golfer that comes in, the biggest thing that people can't do is separate their upper and lower half. So a simple thing you could do at home, you can stand in your golf setup, you can put your hands across your shoulders, and you can try and rotate your hips into your backswing and forward swing without moving your shoulders. So a nice little thing that I tell people when we're doing it in my classes, imagine you have a glass of water on each shoulder. Mm-hmm. And try and rotate your hips into your backswing and forward swing without letting that glass of water fall off your shoulders.
Don't try it with three glasses of water, please. That's very important.
Yeah, and we have a really wet gym in my gym. But anyway, that's kind of what we do, yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose like that mobility, it makes sense like that you can go for all the coaching in the world, but if you haven't got the mobility to get into the positions, you're never going to be able to have the drive and the speed. But,
and that's what, when I work with a lot of teaching professionals, so teaching, you know, a golfer would come into me and he works with a professional, and you know the pro would be working on a certain aspect, whether it's rotation or whatever it may be, your shoulder, external rotation, your shoulders, and I would actually break that down and we'd work on, okay, so we need to work on your shoulder mobility to get you into that correct position in your backswing or whatever it may be, because the pro knows that if that person, that that client's body cannot move or get into that position, you're kind of wasting your time. It is what it is. You really have to try and improve your mobility.
I want to ask you about strength and stability and balance, but I suppose what I do want to ask you, that I'm intrigued, is what age groups do you work with?
Every age group.
Yeah, because golf is for everyone. Yeah, you know, like you see everyone as young as 3 and 4 now picking up golf clubs, all the way up to well after their 80s.
So I've got some, you know, 12, 13-year-old coming into me, and I also have some golfers in their 80s coming into me.
Wow.
And every single golfer comes in, whether it's you just want to play golf as you get older, as the years go on, you just want to get around 9 or 18 holes, which is really, really important. Or if you are an aspiring golfer and you want to, you know, keep up with the next generation of golfers, which is hitting the golf ball a long, long way. So, you know, for the younger golfers that come in, we really put a massive focus on speed and trying to hit the golf ball as far as you can at a young age, because this is the next generation of golfers. Golfers are hitting the golf ball so far now that, you know, and it has to stem from a young age.
And didn't Park Harrington say that before, actually, that he was like, just focus on the speed. Yeah. Don't be slowing their game down. Yeah. When they're older, they can focus on that, but it's just let them get the speed in.
You have to learn. There's windows for fast twitch muscle fibers to develop. So, you know, for girls, it's a little bit younger, but for guys, you know, 13 to 16, for girls, 11 to 13, they're the windows that you need to get moving fast.
Brilliant.
So that's massive, you know. So when a kid comes in and if they're not fast or not training to be explosive or, you know, moving quickly, that's what I focus on.
Well, I know that you said that you find the men that come in need to improve their mobility, whereas the women, it's tend to be more about strength.
Yeah.
Because they probably have the yoga or the Pilates.
Yeah.
Now, I know I'm generalising here before people start coming at me. I know plenty of men do the yoga and the Pilates as well. This is just what the day in, day out is what is showing, Nils. But let's talk strength training for a second then, and the importance of it.
Yeah. So obviously strength training, you know, we all know strength training improves massively.
People might always associate strength training with, you know, needing it for golf.
Yeah. And that's the big thing. People think, well, what do you need strength training for? You don't need to be strong for golf. For what? Mm-hmm. But it's more to protect your joints. And as you get older, you know, strength training just to play golf as the years go on. And I wish, you know, some of the older clients that come in, they always say, God, I wish I started this 30 years sooner, you know? But when I say to them, look, it's great you're in here now, but I, you know, and on hindsight, it's always that. But now this kind of, it's this thought of thing, it's all changing now that people understand that, okay, let's get into a gym, let's enjoy the gym environment, whether it's light strength training, it doesn't have to be crazy, but just getting in and moving and getting stronger. That's what I tell all my clients, get stronger.
And I suppose that when it comes to strength training, it can really identify any imbalances that you might have. So even, you know, from an injury prevention point of view, it's very important that you correct those.
Yeah, absolutely. Imbalances, yeah.
Let's talk about then stability and balance for a second. You have a tip that people can try to help improve their balance, the standing in one
leg. Yeah. So, well, you know, I'm TPI certified, so that's the title of performance issues. So in the TPI testing we do, we actually stand on one leg. And all you have to do, you have to try and close your eyes and keep your balance with your eyes closed. It sounds simple, but if you're doing it at home, make sure there's nothing around you because you might fall.
Maybe somebody's there to catch you if you fall over.
And that's a simple one. But, you know, balance and stability in the golf swing is massive, and especially as when we do start going down the speed route, if you are not stable and you're not balanced, you're not going to find that club face. You're not going to square it up. So really find the stability and balance, and then, you know, we can go down the speed route and stuff like that.
Love that. Warm up. A lot of, I know it myself when I train, you try and skip the warm up, but in golf, it's essential, is it?
Yeah. And no one warms up, to be honest with you. No one does it. So,
but they might do it at home. Yeah. Is that enough?
Yeah. Well, look, completely. But, you know, if someone does it at home, they do 10 minutes and then they jump in the car half an hour to drive to the golf course, you're kind of resetting again. So, what I would recommend, and unfortunately, with most clubs, you know, it's weird to see someone, or people find it weird to be lying around in the changing room, you know, which I'm completely toward. Yeah, do it. Who cares?
Yeah.
Lie on the floor. Try and move a little bit. It means that you're not going to be.
Give people specifics then when you say lie on the floor. What are they doing at the floor when they're lying?
Lying on the floor, you know, you can do an open book. So you lie on your side, you try and keep your knees locked down, mm-hmm. and you're just going to open up your arm and your chest towards the opposite side. Obviously, we're sort of trying to open the book. So that's a simple one you can do, a thoracic rotation exercise mm-hmm. to try and loosen up.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, it's like if one person starts doing it, and often if they see the benefits, and maybe they're hitting the ball that little bit longer or that little bit faster or sharper, so then there's like this knock-on effect for everyone around them. So, you know, if you are the golfers out there, be brave. Start doing your warm-up, start doing your stability, start doing your strength. Is there anything, a parting words that you would leave people with? Just that we've so many golfers and it's wonderful to see people out in the golf course. But like if people are going to have to start something tomorrow morning, what is it that you would be recommending that they start with? Because you don't want to overwhelm people either.
Yeah. And a simple thing would be look at, you know, what your low hanging fruit may be, whatever it may be, whether maybe you want to lose some body weight, maybe you want to move better, whether you want to get stronger, and find what that low hanging fruit is, and then you can work on that. Mm-hmm. And that's what when golfers come into me, that's, you know, whether you're feeling weak and you're not feeling stable over the golf ball, then look at strength work. You know, if you're feeling tight, you're waking up stiff in the morning, look at your mobility. Or whether you want to lose some body fat and you want to just lose some weight, well, then maybe we look at going out for a brisk walk and trying to get your heart rate up a little bit instead of just playing two rounds of golf a week and expecting your body weight to go down.
Well, actually, yeah, let's finish how we started. That idea that sometimes people think that their golf is their fitness.
Yeah.
But actually that they do need to incorporate that aerobic aspect in to improve their golf. So what would you be recommending people start with?
Yeah, and I say, you know, a lot of golfers come into me, you know, you're walking around a golf course, it's a slow, steady pace. You're eating, you're just relaxing.
Chatting. Yeah.
So what I would recommend, if you do go for walks, if you have a set route, try and time yourself, get your heart rate up, and then try and shave minutes off that, whatever circuit or lap that you do around the block or something, and try and take time off that, get your heart rate up, and then you'll start to see some benefits.
And that's what it's all about. Like if you're going to improve your game, like adding in all of these simple changes is going to make people enjoy it as well. Look, I don't golf, but I know many people that do. It's on my to-do list, I promise, Nils. But I know people get very frustrated when their golfing game isn't where they want it to be. So with these simple changes, they can see those. How quickly can you see improvements in your golf?
Pretty instantly, pretty quickly. Yeah. I mean, you can. I mean, if you can turn your shoulders, simply just loosening out your shoulders is going to get you into a better position. That's what I tell people. Just start. You won't regret it.
Well, Nils has plenty of tips as well on his Instagram page. It's Nils Conway, N-I-L-S, Conway Golf Fit. So make sure you check out all of those tips. And thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Time now for the Supercharged Speed Quiz, where each week I find out as much as I can about our guests' health and wellness habits before the clock winds down. And this week, it's Olympian and author David Gillick on the line. David, first of all, Congratulations on your most recent book, the memoir, The Race. I think it's quite a fitting name, The Race, considering the Irish team were in a race against time to get that third goal. Were you watching it?
I was, yeah. Oh, my God. Unbelievable. Like, just what a week.
I know.
You know, from Thursday, I was at the match in the Aviva on Thursday. Yeah. And the atmosphere, and you know, I got to be honest, like, I brought Oscar, my nine-year-old, in with me. And part of the reason was, do you want to see Ronaldo? See Ronaldo play. And then 45 minutes, he's gone. But what an atmosphere in the Aviva. And it just set up today, you know. And then even today, you're kind of going, like, the first few minutes, very shaky start. You go 1-0 down. But credit to the team to come back and then come back again. And then, like, Troy Parrott and that, just, you know what it is.
He's
like,
solidified,
you know,
his legendary status now, I think, for everybody after those performances in the last few days, two of them together. But it's wonderful because I was saying it earlier on, like, it lifts everybody.
Oh, like, unreal. You know, and even, you could sense it over the last couple of days, like Friday, Saturday, that was a bit of a shift. There was now a bit of belief. And even yesterday we had, like, the rugby, had the women's basketball team, like, all of that. It just suddenly, there's a great interest in sport, you know, and people just really get behind it. And it looked like it was all doom and gloom, you know, until a minute to go and just that long ball in. And suddenly now, I know we have the playoffs to come, but I think we're all heading to America.
But you know what? And it's wonderful you mentioned about bringing Oscar. Like, these are memories that you will talk about for decades to come. You'll relive those moments. Where were you when? Yeah. And, you know, Oscar, and you can be like, oh, yeah, no, we watched Ronaldo get sent off. But you'll never forget it.
You'll never forget. And that's what it's all about. I remember, like, I was about seven, vaguely remember Italia 90 and then USA 94, you know. And even this morning, I brought my daughter down to football this morning, and, like, there's a bit of a buzz and people are talking about the match. And, you know, little girls wearing the Irish colours and stuff like that. And that's what it's all about, you know. It's all about inspiring the next generation. And I think, you know, and also I think sometimes with, you know, the way soccer's been over the last couple of years, maybe kids kind of went into GA or went into rugby or went into other sports. And now they've something kind of, all sports need heroes, you know. Yeah. We've definitely got Troy Parrott up there and a whole host of others as well.
I know. And there'll be 17, 8-year-old men walking around in their jerseys, I can assure you, as well, for the next few days. They'll be sleeping in them. They won't be taking them off. They'll be spraying the deodorant under the arms. They'll be going again. And more power to them, because everybody deserves to celebrate these kind of moments, because we have enough down moments and atrocities in the world. So these are the moments that we should be clinging on to as well. Now, what I'm clinging on to is the answers that you're going to give me, because in the Super Charity Speed Quiz, all of our contestants, you know, I have to remind them, it's a speed quiz. But you, being the Olympian that you are and speed being your thing, I'm sure you're going to have absolutely no problem speeding through all of these answers. So are you ready to go?
Hopefully there's no hurdles in here.
Oh, I like that. We'll have to wait and see. We'll keep it a surprise. Okay, are you ready to go?
Let's go.
Okay, let's crack on. Okay, David Gillick, what is your healthiest habit?
Probably running.
Okay, what is your least healthy habit?
Oh, I do like binging on crisps.
What's the crisp of choice?
Do you know what? I'm a savoury person. So probably the worst thing is the share packets that I don't share.
Well, you're sharing them with yourself. So, you know, that's okay. What's the flavour?
Last night I had kind of a chilli flavour. Oh. It was nice.
Okay. Here's me now slowing you down and said I should be speeding you up.
I know.
What's your favourite exercise and why?
Do you know what? I just love being outdoors.
Okay.
So I prefer being outdoor than indoors. Mm-hmm. So whether that's running, cycling, or even just going out with the kids, you know, just outdoors, I think is great.
Yeah. Gym or swim then?
Gym or swim? I go to gym.
Okay. You're like, you like outdoors for most things. See, I'm like you. I won't even take a cold shower. Are you a night owl or an early riser?
Early riser.
Okay. Do you meditate?
I have done, yes.
Was it a regular feature in your life?
It was. It was, yeah. I probably don't do it as much as I used to, but it is something that I would like to get more into.
Well, you've just said it to the nation now, so you already have one of your New Year's resolutions for 2026. How do you relax?
I've started because of my kids, of reading again.
Yeah, so important. It is. You can just immerse yourself in a book and just get lost in it. I love that.
A good book.
Yeah, exactly. What's always in your medicine cabinet?
That is a good question.
I know.
Oh my God. What? I don't know. I don't know.
Plasters for your feet because you're always running.
Plasters. Blister pads for my feet.
Blister pads. Okay, we'll go. If you had one superpower for a day, what would it be?
For a day? I'd love to fly. Just like be able to fly. But what? Can I just say one thing? Actually, you're talking about medicine and stuff like that. I got my eyes lasered this year.
Yeah. Okay? Oh.
Yeah. And if I can, shout out to Wellington Eye Clinic. But I got my eyes lasered and game changer. So I think a superpower, I don't wear contacts anymore. And just the clarity and the vibrancy of what I see is amazing. So,
see, there you go. It's a new lease of life. Yeah. Well, what
It is.
Let's jump to these because I love these ones. What makes you stressed?
What makes me stressed?
You're stressing me out like, now. Come on, speed up.
Financials. I think financials, money sometimes stresses me out.
Yeah, I think you're not alone there. What makes you calm?
I think when I run, I'm calm.
Love that. What makes you laugh?
And my kids make me laugh.
And what makes you happy?
I think just being centered, you know, just being present with the people around you, I think makes me content and happy.
I love that. Well, David Gaelic, thank you so much. You turned into a bit of an endurance athlete there for a while, instead of a sprint athlete, but the answers, but we sped up towards the end, so that was okay.
You got it back on track.
We did. We got it back on track. You hit a bit of a PB there at the end, so fair play to you. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to give us a little bit of an insight into your health and wellness habits. The very best of luck at everything. I know you have a packed schedule as per usual, and hopefully we'll get to chat with you again on Supercharged.
Thanks, Anna.
Take care. Mind yourself. Best luck with the books. Slán.
Cheers. Bye, bye, bye.
Now, feet aren't something that most of us like to think about or talk about. We hide them. Am I right? I think I am. I know I hide mine. And we often neglect them. So podiatrist Ruth Conway is here with us. She's educating us on the importance of just minding our feet. Thank you so much for being in studio with us, Ruth. Welcome to Supercharged. For a lot of us, let's start with the basics, the basic foot care. What should we all be doing?
Hi, Anna. Thanks so much for having me here today. So basics, I think really we need to bring it back to hygiene. I've seen a lot of that recently, people skipping over this part. You need to wash your feet with soap and water when you're in the shower. Don't just let the shower water kind of rinse over the feet. It's not enough. You have to get all that grime and sweat and dirt off the feet, wash in between the toes, and then dry them thoroughly afterwards. Then you put on your clean socks after the fact. And if you can do that, you're doing actually a lot more than most people.
They're probably doing a lot more than me now, I'll be very honest. I often thought, sure, isn't the water running down the face? But actually, you have to scrub the toes as well. So we have to be bending down and getting in. Okay, well, even that alone, as you said, that would be progress for a lot of us. Yeah. Let's talk then about, you know, people moisturise their faces. They moisturise their bodies. Yeah. Don't often moisturise their feet.
Yeah, exactly. People even moisturise their hands a lot more than moisturise their feet.
How important is that?
It depends on the person. Some people don't need to do it at all, and other people have just a drier skin type. Like, you'll know yourself if you have that kind of white flaking skin that's coming off. Sometimes people take off their socks and there's almost like a cloud of skin flakes.
It's
and
not it's a lovely nice visual.
Lovely image there. But if that's your case, then you do need to use an emollient more than other people. So once or twice a week is a good start. If you feel like it's not enough, then you can up it. And obviously you don't put it in between your toes. That's kind of a wet enough area there. Just focus around the heels.
Cutting our nails.
Yeah.
What should or shouldn't we be doing? Because I know ingrown toenails can happen just from people cutting them the wrong way. Yeah. What are the basics?
This is a really good question. So what I see is different shapes of nail plates coming into the clinic. Some people, they cut them straight across. That's fine. Others, you need to follow the natural curve in the nail plate. It's the same with your fingernails. There's a little bit of a bend to it. You follow that and then give them a little file after. It's nice and simple.
Okay. Yeah. And don't cut down the sides.
Don't get scissor happy. Don't go too far.
That's what I was told. Don't cut down the sides.
Yeah, hold back. Yeah.
One of the things I want to ask you about is the idea of the wide shoe.
Okay.
A lot of people think when they get calluses or corns, which we will delve into in a few moments' time, lovely topic, but they think, oh, I need a wider shoe. But this idea of a deeper toe box, what is this? I'm really intrigued.
Yeah, it just depends on the style of shoes. Some of them, when you're going for the broader, the wider toe box, they already have the depth to accommodate your forefoot.
Others. So is that because what? So the shoe has more space? Is it the,
yeah, the, yeah, okay. Pretty much. It's just, if you imagine, like, say, your Converse style of shoe, and it's got that plastic cap over the top of it. And if you looked at that sideways on, it's actually really shallow. So some people can get away with that, it's fine. But if you're getting irritation to your nails, or if you're getting corns on the tops of your toes, you need to look at something that has more depth.
What about socks?
Yeah.
What should or shouldn't we be using when it comes? You have a little bit of an interesting tip as well. That's why I'm asking you about socks.
Oh, right. Okay. So I was saying, I was talking to you before we were going on the air, actually, about turning the socks inside out. Yeah. If you're finding that you're getting irritation, again, kind of on the knuckles of the upper part of the toes, if you turn your socks inside out, it actually alleviates a lot of that pressure. It's really simple.
Yeah.
Again, like, easy fix.
Yeah, and I often wear my socks inside out. Yeah. Purely because I was just the speed of trying to get out of the house in the morning.
You're so actually doing good now.
I'm doing stuff and I didn't even realise it. We actually have some audio notes in. I wanted to play them out here for you for a moment.
Okay.
Many years I had a lot of trouble with my feet, with shoes. I had a bunion on each side, on each foot. And eventually, what always put me off was the recovery time, not so much getting it done. So I decided to go ahead then 2 years ago, and it's the best thing I ever did. It was really affecting my walking. I walk a lot, and it was, you know, beginning to impact really a lot of areas. And then the bonus was to be able to buy basically any shoes that I want now. Yeah. So I'm very happy that I did it.
I actually have a lot of trouble with my feet and have done for years. So I'd like to be able to wear any shoe that I like, irrespective of what height heel it is, and I wouldn't suffer the consequences the next day, as in sore feet, kind of feel like my muscles in my feet, behind the ball of my feet, are just aching.
I would like to improve an athlete's foot irritation that I find I get between my toes when I drink diet soda, like Diet Coke. So any solutions for that will be very gratefully received. Thank you.
So many different types of ailments there. Uh-huh. Some common, some perhaps not so common. Anything here that's stunning. Have you ever heard of the diet soda?
I've never heard of that. No.
So you go, see, there's, we learn something new every day. But let's talk about, I suppose, some of the most common issues that you see.
I think each year seems to have its own theme. So last year, there was a huge influx of patients coming into the clinic who were wearing shoes that were too small for them and getting issues as a result. This year, it seems to be fungus, the load of fungus around at the moment. It might have been the hotter summer that's brought that on. People had sweatier foot types, and then, you know, we're seeing the after effects of that.
Yeah. We've all suffered from the sweaty feet at times. Well, let's start there, even that idea of fungal infection. Okay. What can people do, or how can people maybe identify that they perhaps might have it?
So sometimes you can get an itch, but that's not the only kind of symptom of a fungus. There's also a red rash. The skin can be peeling off in little circles, and you can also get little pustules as well in the soles of your feet. What I would say is try a topical over-the-counter treatment first, so you can get your cream in the chemist. Apply that, finish the tube, so be thorough with the treatment. Apply it all over both the feet, in between the toes as well, all over the soles. Wash your hands afterwards. And then see where you are after that. Sometimes people don't respond to that, and it might be something else. You might have a little bit of a rash from kind of an irritation or an allergic reaction to something on the soles of the shoes. But generally speaking, it's a fungal rash, and it goes away with the over-the-counter treatments. But if you're not seeing the results, then after that, again, book in with your
podiatrist. How long realistically should people wait until they see results? You know, we all want quick fixes nowadays.
Yeah, it's not going to be that quick. I'd say 2 weeks of your topical cream at first.
That's okay.
Yeah, and then depending on the extent of it, I've had patients who require a little bit of a longer period of treatment. But, you know, you work with your podiatrist on that, and you can form a treatment plan.
We heard from a woman there about bunions earlier. Like, do bunions ever go away?
No, I'm afraid
really?
Not. No.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah. You can stop them from getting worse.
Okay.
So you can do your rehab work. You might need an orthotic that helps your foot function better. Surgery is a way to get rid of them, but that has its own risks as well, do you know? So I'm afraid it's a case of kind of building up the weaker muscles around it and trying to strengthen it that way.
We have a question. How do I stop my son getting verrucas?
You can't.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can't. So what can we do then? We'll say, you know, to help minimise the extent of verrucas, or to kind of shorten their lifespan, if that's possible.
I think there seems to be kind of an age where people get exposed to them when they're doing different kind of mat-based activities. So say if they're doing gymnastics or if they're learning swimming. To swim, yeah, or if they're doing karate even. And what I just say is when you get home, again, you're bringing it back to your basics, wash your feet with your soap and water. You're trying to keep them clean. And then, you know, check the feet. And if you catch the verruca early, then it's going to go more quickly.
There's a question in here, and I'm asking this because I'm intrigued myself. Can you really get rid of a verruca by putting duct tape over it, or is that an urban myth?
You actually can, yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Now, what I'd say is use something like a sports strapping tape instead. Okay. Just the duct tape can kind of irritate the healthy skin around it, whereas the sports strapping tape, you get the occlusion, but you're not irritating the healthy skin. So it's working in two ways. You're occluding the virus, but then you're also causing a little bit of trauma to the area. You're removing the keratinous cap, which is a layer of hard skin that forms over the verruca to try and protect it. And that minimises how effective any topical treatment is that you're using on it. So if you're kind of, I suppose, ripping it off each time that you're pulling off the sticky tape, you're creating trauma and you're theoretically alerting your immune system to fight it off itself. Yeah.
I'm weirdly intrigued by this.
But I would say just give it a few months, and if it's not working or if it's spreading, then you do need to seek.
How can you tell then it's a verruca even versus something like a corn if there's a build-up of skin in it?
Yeah, they say typically verrucas are not painful and corns are. If you pinch a verruca, you should get some sort of pain in it, whereas direct pressure on a corn would cause the discomfort. Also, they're called striations. They're basically the lines in your skin. So with a verruca, they pass around it, and then with a corn, they go through it.
Speaking of corns, are people okay to use the over-the-counter corn plasters, or should they be going to someone like a chiropodist? Yeah.
I'd say go to your chiropodist or your podiatrist. Now, look, they must work for some people, but they're not the ones that I see in the clinic. So your corn plasters contain an acid. It's typically salicylic acid, and it burns away the skin. Mm-hmm. But it can't decipher whether or not it's a corn or if it's healthy skin. It just burns. So I have seen cases where people have quite a nasty burn after using them or leaving them on for too long. And really, they'd have been better off just coming in and getting the corn taken out.
OK.
Yeah.
Let's talk about nail polish.
Okay.
You know, your shellac nail polish. A lot of people, you know, you use it. There's a question in here that when the shellac polish was removed, their nails looked yellow. So has that damaged my nails is the question.
Chances are it has. It's not irreversible. You know, shellac I would advise against, but I think it's unrealistic to expect people to not use nail polish. You can get podiatrist designed ones that have less harsh chemicals in them and that are less damaging. But if it's the case that you've had shellac on and your nails are brittle or yellowed or thickened, or if they have kind of a white chalky appearance to them as well, you need to use some sort of topical antifungal and make an appointment with your podiatrist. Yeah.
And look, it's a good time of year to do that because we're hiding our feet in the boots and everything. So yeah, as I said, the summer can be a little bit harder for people. There's a question, how long to clear fungus in a toenail like you've just mentioned?
So I'd always say to patients to give yourselves about a year. It's typically, I know, I'm sorry. It's typically a year for the nail to fully grow out. And if you're consistent with your treatment, that's around the time it takes. You can be lucky and it can go quicker, but that's generally the span of time.
And what does a fungal nail look like? I'm going home checking my nails.
You'll know.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll know. It has that white. It has a change in texture. It's thickened. It's crumbly. It's brittle. It's yellowed. It's, you know, it doesn't look like a healthy nail. It doesn't look happy.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have another text in. Any tips for plantar fasciitis? I'm a 63-year-old active farmer. I've tried physio and stretching, but it was no good. I think, I'm not sure, is this a question here? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
I'm just not sure if that's my father-in-law that sent that in or not. Hi, well, Billy.
He hasn't left a name. It's anonymous. So
he's playing me. No, I think so. Plantar fasciitis. I'm sorry that's happened to you. That's really painful.
Sore.
Yeah, really, really painful. And I think when you're a farmer, you have to wear your work boots or a wellie, and you mightn't necessarily get the same support as you would from a runner or something. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is book in with your podiatrist. We can do a biomechanical assessment. And then you would use that. So you might get an orthotic or an insole. that supports the foot, and then you would have a treatment plan. So you'd either do kind of your stretching and your rehab work, and then you have your dry needling or your sports strapping, something like that. And it's the three things that work together, and over time the inflammation is reduced. Okay. And you can go about your
I have
day.
Two other quick questions for you before we wrap up. Flat feet, is there anything people are asking that they can do for flat feet?
It depends on if you're symptomatic or not. So if you're getting pain, then I again would go in and get something like an orthotic just to hold the foot in a better position. And then you'd have your treatment plan again. So you'd have your exercises and your strengthening, your kind of rehab work. And then the idea with that is that it would train the muscles to fire correctly and hold the foot in a better position. If you're not in pain, you know, most people have a slightly pronated foot type, which is the flatter foot, and like, you know, more power to you. If you're not in pain, I think you're okay.
Yeah, and I know I remember, because I do have flat feet. I've got a lot of things wrong with my feet as we talk through here this today. And the pencil, trying to pick up a pencil in between your toes, is that?
That's great. It's kind of, it's practicing clawing with
yes,
the feet.
The contraction
of
the muscle.
Yeah, exactly. And what it does is it's trying to switch on the more intrinsic muscles, the lesser muscles that have switched off with the flatter foot type. So the ones that kind of extend from the second toe out to the fifth toe, you'll find you'll be able to do about 10 reps and then your foot will fatigue, and that's a good indicator that it's weak in the first place.
Okay. I think we have an audio question in here.
I suppose I would like to ask, what can I do just to accommodate that sort of feeling that I get when I change my shoes? My feet feel just tingly and uncomfortable for a few days, actually. It's okay if I wear the same shoes every day, but like, who wants to be wearing the same shoes day in, day out?
She's dead right. Who wants? We've got all these shoes. We need to be wearing them. What do you think? Well, I suppose that's, without knowing too much about
that lady. Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, if the tingling kind of persists, I would definitely go to your GP and get bloods and possibly an MRI organised as well, just to make sure it's nothing more sinister. But if it's a case that certain shoes are suiting you and then others aren't.
Could they be too tight?
They could be too tight, and just try and look at the shoe that is working for you and try and emulate that in the other styles. But it's like jeans, you know, like some styles suit you, some styles don't, you know. It's
just, and my final question is, and that's a question that's come in from people, is it okay to wear runners all the time?
Yeah.
In a word,
a lot of people, short answer.
You know what I mean? Because a lot of people nowadays, they're, you know, that's their comfort. They're at home, they may be working from home, walking places.
I would just have a few different pairs of runners.
Okay, there you go. Good. There is your opportunity to treat yourself to a new pair of runners if you wear runners all the time. Ruth Conway, thank you so much for coming in. I know you have a new website up and running pretty soon. It's coming, d6podiatry.ie, so people can keep a lookout for that. But thank you so much for answering all of our questions. And I know I'll be definitely listening back to this afterwards and taking notes myself. So thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Now, do you know what your blood pressure is? You probably should. And coming up, we're going to give you tips that might just save your life. In last week's show, we learned that high blood pressure is a risk factor for both dementia and type 2 diabetes. So we thought it would be very valuable to invite our resident dietitian and physiologist, Orla Walsh, back into studio to give us some advice on how to use food to lower blood pressure and reduce the risks. Welcome back, Orla. It's always great to see you in studio. Before we talk about exactly what high blood pressure is, I read this week, and I want to check, is it true that high blood pressure is actually responsible for more early deaths than any other risk factor?
Yeah, it's a risk factor that leads to a lot of deaths, and a lot of people are a bit blasé about it. So even in my clinic, people will come in and they will know their cholesterol levels and they'll know their cholesterol history. I ask about blood pressure and they're very vague. And it is a worry, because it should be taken more seriously. And I think the problem then leads to the fact that, you know, by the age of, in Ireland, over 50s, 2 in 3 people have high blood pressure. But studies suggest that about 50% of people are unaware of their high blood pressure.
Because there may not be symptoms.
Yes, it can be symptomless, generally is. And, you know, it does lead to events. So the majority of people, 7, 8 out of 10 people who have their first heart attack or first stroke have high blood pressure. And it is worrying, because even the people who know they have high blood pressure, about half of them are poorly managed. So with medications and lifestyle, and some aren't managed at all. They're just living with high blood pressure. And I don't think people understand the consequences.
Well, we're going to talk about the very important lifestyle change that people need to be making, whether or not they suffer from it, to prevent it. But let's talk about exactly what high blood pressure is defined as first.
Well, it depends what guidelines you're using. But generally speaking, you have to take note if it goes above 120 over 80. Okay. So if, for example, it goes, you know, the top number goes to 140, you're now doubling your risk of dying from heart attack or stroke. So it should be, I know.
It is
massive. And it's a risk factor we need to know about. We all need to know our blood pressure. We all need to know, does it tend to be higher? Is it lower than 120 over 80? And we need to know the lifestyle modifications that we can make to lower it, because they're extremely effective.
How often should people be taking their blood pressure?
It depends with all of these things, because if you go in and you find out it's higher, then you should be maybe even checking at home in a sort of periodic way. So, for example, checking it every day for 7 to 10 days in the morning, and you check it 3 times, then taking an average of the second and third time.
And how do people do that? I know there's, like, you know, the resting of your hand and sitting down, like, just to give people the few little things to be
aware of. I hope most people will have had their blood pressure taken. They put a cuff around your upper arm and the cuff blows up. And I suppose the main thing of it is you want it to be done accurately. And to be done accurately, your arm has to be resting on a table around heart height. You shouldn't be listening to anyone and you shouldn't be talking. Your feet should be on the ground. You should have peed before you went in. There's all of these guidelines, yet when I ask people about them, they're like, well, then in that case, I've never had it checked accurately. And thankfully, the machines to check them at home are, you know, about 50 euro. They're not as high as many other machines or interventions, I guess.
No, I know, like,
assessments.
Increased high blood pressure can come from things like too little exercise, too much stress, too much salt. But let's talk, I suppose, really about the diet. And like you mentioned, lifestyle changes. What can we do when it comes to food and diet to help?
Okay, so in terms of food and diet, one of the most important things we do is reduce our salt intake. People have been confused about this over the years because some studies suggest that it's not important, but actually the studies where they check urine salt samples more than once a day are very accurate and very clear. You increase your salt, you increase your blood pressure. So we do need to reduce it. Most men in Ireland are consuming twice as much as they should. So really reduce the salt. But we also get extra points if we increase our potassium at the same time. And that is through potassium-rich fruit and veg. Yummy ones that we grow even in Ireland, like rhubarb and parsnips and spinach and things, as well as our humble spud. And we really want to increase our potassium levels. But you will be eating enough potassium if you're eating enough fruit and veg, and people just aren't doing that.
Now, I know the DASH diet can help lower blood pressure naturally. So talk to people about what that is.
The DASH diet is really effective, and it can be enough for people so that they don't have to go on first line medications for blood pressure, which come as well with their own risk ratios. But it's 4 to 5 portions of fruit, 4 to 5 portions of dairy, or sorry, 4 to 5 portions of fruit, 4 to 5 portions of vegetables, which that is a challenge and something that people have to, I suppose, increase slowly. The other thing is 2 to 3 dairy a day, which isn't a problem in Ireland because our dairy is delicious. Mm-hmm. But nuts and seeds and legumes, you want to be getting those once a day, maybe 2 to 3 portions of fats, and then about 6 to 8 portions of whole grains. So it sounds a lot like just healthy eating guidelines.
Yes.
And you are nodding along. But it is a specific diet encouraging high potassium, and also looking at things like calcium, magnesium levels in our food, and just making sure we're hitting those markers.
And magnesium now, when obviously I think calcium, I think dairy, but what would magnesium be in that people need to know about?
When you think magnesium, think green. So green vegetables, there's lots mm-hmm. of magnesium in there, but also nuts and seeds. So if you, for example, have thrown nuts or seeds into your bread, for example, you're making bread at home, you'll see they go green, and that's that magnesium showing its face.
I always think anything to do with greens, if you don't like them, throw them into a soup maker. It's
yeah.
a great way to get in the greens, hide them from the kids or the husband or the wife, whoever yeah. doesn't like the greens. But as you said,
such a necessary part of our diet because they're rich in folates too, and that's really important for lots of things, including the likes of fertility.
realistically, when it comes to high blood pressure, like how long does it take to see results and reduce it?
It can be quite quick initially. So we can actually lower blood pressure even within 4 hours with something like beetroot juice or consuming enough beetroots. But generally speaking, you can see meaningful results within 2 weeks. But certainly some, I suppose the results that have more meaning are the ones that are maintained. And that's the beauty of a lot of the dietary guidance when it comes to lowering blood pressure. You're not asking too much from people. But one of the most important things is exercise. The thing about exercise is it lowers blood pressure really effectively and beautifully, but only for about 24 hours. So you have to do it every day.
Okay, so that's where the consistency comes in. Yeah. Now, the high blood pressure can sometimes come when you're watching people exercising or playing sport, as we've seen a few hours ago, but that's only a short-term thing.
It is temporary, don't worry. We're talking about chronic or long-term.
Exactly. And is there any final parting words that you would say to people if they are worried about either their own blood pressure or somebody else's?
I wouldn't be worried. It's a risk factor, not the consequence. And there's lots that can be done and quite quickly and meaningfully. And there is some free information on my website about it. Some even if you want to give the DASH diet a go, I've spelled it out, made it easy as possible with some meal plans and sample meal plans as well for people.
I've seen that. That's absolutely brilliant. Yes, Orla has all of that information and more on her website. That's orlawalshnutrition.ie. And as always, she always has some really interesting content as well on her Instagram page at Orla Walsh Nutrition. As always, thank you so much for educating us. I'll be off to the shop to stock up on all of my fruit and veg and to hide those greens as well. Thank you. That is all we have time for this evening. My thanks to all the team here, John, Louise, Demi and Blaheen, including Liam Mullen on sound. You can listen back to this show and all of our past shows on RT Radio app or rt.ie/supercharged or wherever you get your podcasts. But until next Sunday evening, go celebrate and mind yourselves and mind each other.
Supercharged with Ali Geary on RTE Radio 1.
And Supercharged is an Ojo production for RTE Radio 1.